today. The government says it is being guided by the science when it comes to COVID-19. But what does that really mean? Yesterday, Boris Johnson returned to Downing Street 3 weeks after he was admitted to intensive care with COVID-19. Immediately, he responded to pressure, including from within his own Conservative Party, to start to ease the countrywide lockdown. Warning.
If this virus were a physical assailant, an unexpected and invisible mugger, which I can tell you from personal experience it is, then this is the moment when we have begun together to wrestle it to the floor.
He said that only once deaths are falling, testing and PPE is at adequate levels, and it's clear that Britain will avoid a second peak, can we move into the next phase?
We must also recognise the risk of a second spike, the risk of losing control of that virus and letting the reproduction rate go back over one.
As we've been told throughout this crisis, every decision the Prime Minister is making is being guided by the science. But how can we understand what that means when the key committee providing that science, known as SAGE, doesn't publish its minutes and is only now ready to share a list of its members after pressure mounted following a Guardian leak? From The Guardian, I'm Anoushka Astana. Today in Focus, the secretive scientific committee guiding Britain's coronavirus response. Sonia Soda, chief lead writer at The Observer and a columnist at The Guardian. Tell us, what is SAGE?
So SAGE is the government scientific advisory group for emergencies. It has a rotating cast of members depending on the subject that it's meeting to talk about. It sort of meets on an ad hoc basis. So when there's a big crisis that means that the government needs scientific advice, so whether that's a pandemic, like Ebola, for example, flooding around the time of the Icelandic ash cloud, the government will draw in various experts depending on the subject that it needs to take advice on. So SAGE's advice gets fed into the government and into the political decision-making that happens at the time of a big crisis. And that happens through COBRA, which is the meeting that brings together all of the ministers that will be involved in that decision-making.
OK, so when we heard again and again that the government was being led by the science...
We are just being entirely science-led.
When they use that to justify going a bit more slowly towards lockdown...
We want to know that the scientists back it.
When they mention the theory of herd immunity, or more specifically, when Boris Johnson suggested that cancelling sports events may not be that effective...
There is very little epidemiological or medical reason at the moment to ban such events.
Closing schools could even be harmful because it could hit key workers' ability to work.
The scientific advice is that this could do more harm than good.
All of that was SAGE.
That's right. Although the lack of transparency about the what the government calls the science means that it's hard to know how much of this comes from SAGE and how much of it is political interpretation of the scientific advice that SAGE is providing. So, for example, if you look at the papers that SAGE produced for government in mid-February about large-scale events and cancelling large-scale events and about closing schools, actually what's quite interesting, I think, is that the advice as presented by SAGE was far less certain than the way in which Boris Johnson talked about it in mid-March, when he was justifying why the government wasn't closing big events or closing schools at the same time that other countries were. And I think that reflects a bit of an issue that the scientific community has with the way that the government has talked about the science. It talks about following the science as if, you know, scientists provide a sort of a set of certain recommendations that all the government has to do is act upon. That's very much not the case. What's interesting when it comes to SAGE and transparency is that there appeared to be a real effort to be more transparent. There was a lot of criticism in mid-March, so the government published a range of papers that were the advice that SAGE had given to government. But there seems to have been a real rowing back of that since then. So there hasn't been anything published since around the 16th of March. And that is, I think, again, why people are concerned.
And it's clear that they've been listening to behavioural scientists as well, isn't it? Early on, there was this suggestion that they didn't want to go into lockdown too early because people might get fatigued.
If people go too early, they become very fatigued. This is going to be a long haul. It is very important we do not start things in advance of need.
I mean, you've reported on that. What do we know about how that is feeding into policy?
Well, again, I think there's a bit of a lack of transparency here. So if you look at the actual papers that have come from the SAGE Behavioural Subcommittee, they're pretty non-committal, actually, on things like the idea of behavioural fatigue. So, the idea that you shouldn't go too early with a lockdown because people will stop complying with it. And so it's better to wait until it might have more impact.
While we can see what has been submitted to SAGE, what we aren't getting as much information about is the decisions being taken by the committee itself. And in particular, they hadn't told us who their members were, although they now say they are going to do that. Why had they kept that list secret?
So the government says that it's kept that list secret for two reasons. The first is to protect the scientists who are on the committee. And we've heard from one scientist, Jeremy Farrar, who has made his membership public, that he has received a lot of abuse, even some death threats. The other reason that Sir Patrick Vallance, the chief scientific officer, have given is that it's important to keep the members secret so that they're not subject to undue lobbying or influence. So those are the arguments that the government gives. I think there are a lot of question marks about how reasonable those arguments are. No one would want scientists to be subject to abuse on social media, for example. But, you know, there are questions about, you know, are there ways in which they could be protected? This question of sort of lobbying or influence, that has to be balanced against the fact that if we don't know who's on that committee, scientists outside of SAGE can't really scrutinise it in quite the same way. And we've had a few scientists who have really questioned whether there's enough breadth of scientific expertise on that committee. So, for example, we know that SAGE, as constituted for this pandemic, involves virologists, epidemiologists, behavioural scientists, as you'd expect. But some people have questioned, for example, why it doesn't include public health experts or more frontline clinicians.
And it's in that context that our Guardian colleagues revealed an explosive leak last week that not only lifted the lid on SAGE's membership, but showed that two of the people taking part in meetings were senior Downing Street political advisers, including Dominic Cummings. The government said that the Prime Minister's chief strategist should be listening to these conversations at such a critical time. But others believe the move undermines the independence of SAGE.
How surprised were you to hear that Dominic Cummings had been at those meetings?
Well, frankly, I was very surprised.
Sir David King was the government's chief scientific advisor between 2000 and 2007.
This is advice from the scientific community to the government. Now, what is important about that is that it is fully understood that once the science advice has gone in, a political decision is then made. What is really worrying about having somebody like Cummings present and also asking questions and getting engaged in the discussion is that it seems to me when you have a political advisor, and let's not forget he is paid for by the Conservative Party, that is the advisor to the Prime Minister, that person takes his own view into the Prime Minister as well as the chief scientific advisor, which in my view is just totally confusing.
So you wouldn't have had a figure like Dominic Cummings in any of your meetings?
No. No, no. The meetings that I called on foot and mouth disease or on avian flu epidemic or whatever, those meetings were free of any spads, any political advisor. And by the way, there were always civil servants sitting in on my science advisory committees, and they are necessary. They are silent. They don't join in the discussion.
And is it key that they're civil servants, not political spads?
That's the key point I'm making, absolutely.
And it sounds like you're also worried about the fact that we're not getting information about what is being decided in those meetings.
That's what I'm particularly worried about. I think that when you have ministers or prime ministers saying, we are following the science advice, how are you, the media, able to judge that if you don't know what the science advice is, independently of hearing it through government? If you want to keep the trust of the public, that science advice has to go into the public domain directly and without filters from the political masters.
And can I just ask you one thing? The science is sort of presented in some ways as if it's a fact. You know, the science tells us A, the science tells us B, whilst we watch that in other countries, the science was telling them something else. It isn't the truth that science isn't a fact. Science is something that can be argued about, and all those members of SAGE may not agree with each other.
Absolutely, but there's something more in your question than just disagreements over, you know, two epidemiologists disagreeing with the outcome of their models. It's all about the different expertise that different scientists bring to the table and how one person has to distill that into a single piece of advice. It isn't just epidemiology. It isn't just one aspect of science. It's so many different aspects.
What was it like when you chaired those meetings over SARS or over foot and mouth? Did it ever get heated?
There were certainly heated discussions. How often did we meet in the foot and mouth disease epidemic? It was every day. And the scientists on the group were working almost 24/7. I mean, we were dealing with a crisis as they are now in the middle of the crisis, and we didn't have a satisfactory means of controlling it. We had to learn how it was spreading and then model it as we were going along.
And just can I ask you, during your time as CSA, there was a SARS outbreak, admittedly on the other side of the world. So I don't know how close you felt it came, but did you convene an emergency committee to talk about that?
Yes, and what was happening during the SARS outbreak was that the WHO in Geneva was very actively involved, and we contributed our key epidemiologists to help handle that outbreak. And one of my worries at the moment is, why are we really in the back seat in managing this epidemic compared with many other countries with our expertise? And there is another point here, which is since 2010, we've had a massive cutback in National Health Service funding and in care systems funding, and we were totally unprepared for a pandemic. And yet, in 2007, we were developing all of the preparations because we knew that a pandemic of this kind was an inevitability.
We're now in the middle of that pandemic, and from what I understand, absolutely central to conversations at the top of government is the R0 number. That's the number that tells you how many people on average each infected person is passing COVID-19 onto. The aim is to get it under one, because if it's above that, then the outbreak is continuing to increase exponentially. We understand that it is currently between 0.6 and 1, which is good news, but SAGE will be advising on how any loosening of the lockdown could affect that. How could those measures affect the R0 number?
It's very difficult to say, other than if you loosen the lockdown, we're going to see R0 going up. But this does depend on a number of other factors. So, for example, I believe everyone during the lockdown period or immediately in the next period beyond it, as we go shopping or wherever we go, whether we go walking in the park or whatever, we should be wearing face masks. I just think every person outdoors should be wearing a face mask. And because we haven't got ourselves into the position as a country to produce face masks, and this I find very, very distressing, we have many capable manufacturers who could have been lined up to deliver however many face masks we need. They're not that difficult to produce. We could have done that in February or January even, and we would then be in a position to say, you don't go outdoors without a face mask. Now, that would reduce R0. So I think there's a number of factors that probably are not included in the calculations being made by epidemiologists, I don't know, but that would be a bigger and faster way to free up our ability to operate normally.
And just off the back of this, how worried are you about what's going to happen next? Boris Johnson is very clearly under great pressure to start laying out a roadmap towards some sort of new normality. But as you say, that R0 number is incredibly sensitive.
Yes. So what I would like to see is a comprehensive COVID-19 task force set up as a temporary government department. And I say all of this because the science advice is one angle, but Ministry of Defence ought to be heavily involved. We need to be ramping up not only manufacturing capacity for PPE, we need to be ramping up our testing capability much, much faster. I'm emphasising as well the development of vaccines. Have we got the vaccine manufacturing capacity? So I think there's much to be done. But I would love to see it all focused in a new operation.
Coming up, Sonia talks about the role of SAGE as the government assesses the possibility of loosening the lockdown. Okay, so let's talk about how SAGE fits into the jigsaw of the government's response to COVID-19. As you said, it's an offshoot of the government's emergency committee, COBRA. And in particular, it feeds into a critical meeting every morning at 9:15, chaired by the Prime Minister with key cabinet colleagues, Valance, the Chief Medical Officer, Chris Whitty, and officials. And increasingly, they are thinking about the R0 number and what exit strategy measures would do to that. The Prime Minister is just back, and he's already under pressure to start loosening the lockdown, isn't he?
He is, absolutely. So I think there are sort of two strands of pressure for him. First is scientists saying we just need more transparency about the exit strategy, what the triggers might be, etc. But then you've got a series of really political pressures as well, which is from some people in the cabinet, from Conservative donors, from some backbenchers, which is that some Conservatives are really worried about the impact this lockdown is having on the economy.
We've seen reports of a traffic light system that might start to ease the lockdown, though they've been clear that this is going to be the new normal for a long time. What sort of things are they talking about?
So reportedly, this is what they're talking about. They're talking about perhaps reopening some non-essential businesses, for example, garden centres. This is a really bad time of year for garden centres to be closed because it's when they do most of their trade. It's the equivalent of Christmas time for garden centres, DIY stores, hairdressers. They will be thinking about reopening schools, reportedly from June.
And when they're thinking about it, people who are familiar with the discussions that are taking place in those evening meetings tell me that it's seen as an unbelievably difficult balancing act, that scientists on SAGE will tell them that any one of those measures will drive up the R0. Does the science really exist independently of the politics? Will it be SAGE driving the exit strategy? Or will the Treasury and the economic advisers start to get precedence once the death rate really starts to fall?
Well, it's obviously not just SAGE. It's the job of COBRA and the Cabinet to weigh the scientific advice against the evidence of the economic impact that the lockdown might be having. I think it's really important to say, though, actually, that there needs to be just as much transparency on that economic side as there is on the science side. So, for example, we've seen people anonymous from government anonymously brief the press saying, you know, if this lockdown carries on too much longer, it could cause 150,000 deaths itself because of some of the economic measures and impacts on the NHS, for example. Well, it's not good enough for people to just go out and brief. We need to see the assumptions on which that is based just as much as we need to see the assumptions on the science. You know, regardless of what its donors and Tory backbenchers are saying about the economy, the government will want to keep R0 below one because they know that if it creeps above one, that's when we might be back into, accelerating increase in infection rate and death rates, and that could lead to a second peak. So I'm not so sure that that trade-off between science and the economy works in quite the way that some people in the cabinet might like to think it does. But at the same time, I think the government will be thinking about what things can we do that might alleviate the burden on the economy that doesn't push R0 above one.
Do you know whether there are tensions within the cabinet, whether some are pushing in one direction harder than the other?
There are certainly tensions in the cabinet, and they've really been manifesting themselves while Boris Johnson has been off work sick with coronavirus. So there's hawks and doves within the cabinet. There are doves who think that the lockdown's really important, and reportedly in that group we've got people like Matt Hancock. Actually, Dominic Cummings is thought very much to be in that group now, in favour of keeping the lockdown in place. But on the other side, you've got Rishi Sunak, Liz Truss, Michael Gove, who are thought to be much more hawkish about the need to relax some of the restrictions in order to alleviate the burden on the economy.
Arguably, yesterday when Boris Johnson spoke, he did start to hint at the uncertainty, certainly in some of those really big decisions about how we start to move towards an exit strategy. And you can see also that ministers are very nervous about taking the first step in that direction. Have we reached a point where people are starting to accept that it's not quite as simple as they may have once wanted to make out, and that the only way to really keep public trust through all of this is now to be much more transparent about the advice that they're getting, who is listening to it, and how they then reach the critical decisions?
Yes, I think that's right. And I think it's important to note that lots of scientists have been saying from the very beginning, the only way to maintain public trust through something like this is to treat the public like grown-ups and to be upfront about uncertainty and to be much more transparent about the advice on which you're making decisions. And I thought it was really interesting that Boris Johnson's statement on Monday morning, he said that there was going to be more transparency going forwards. Now, I think it remains to be seen whether that's actually the case, but I think it's positive at least that he's making sort of noises about transparency and saying that there will be more information in the coming days about what might inform an exit strategy.
Does everyone, politicians and scientists, have one eye on the inevitable public inquiry and protecting their own reputations?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely think that. And I think that you can see it actually in the way that the government has talked about, we're following the science here, we're following the science. It very much comes across like it's using the science as a shield. And it feels like, politicians are sort of getting ready for if there is a public inquiry afterwards to say, well, not me, Gov, if there were mistakes made, we just did what the scientists told us.
That was Sonia Soda and Sir David King. Do read the revelations from our investigations team at theguardian.com, with more coming this week. That's it for today. My thanks to Sonia and Sir David. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Cassin and Serena Barker-Singh. Sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.